caravan just keeps moving. Even if the chair is alone sitting in front here, as long as the chair is still in the seat or someone to be in his place, this caravan keeps moving. The dogs will bark all along. You know, when you're in the desert, caravan moves past, the dogs bark, and then after a while they stop barking. The caravan just keeps moving. Huh? Yeah, all the song and dances of yourself. Alright, let's quickly see if there are any questions from Mr. Luki before we move on to the next two inputs. Any further questions? You feel comfortable like me that except for the one or two issues we now can put in our report which they've left out. We can, I must say that personally, and I haven't studied the white paper properly yet to give a final view, but just on the things I've been reading and the things I've seen, I must say I just think that this, for a developing country, I think the approach we're taking here, although it could be in some instances even revolutionary in a way, I think it's the right approach we're taking, and I think it's much better than we were taking in the green paper. And I know that around the issue of carbon budgets and so on, that the business community would raise a lot of things, but don't worry about that. Just send them to us. We'll deal with them. I hope they come and make some inputs here, because that is the way to go. Okay, all these different mechanisms we're doing so that we can create a gentle growth path, but one that's radical in the end and achieves our goals. So I am quite enthused by it. Of course, this is not the end of the story. We're still going to hear the submissions from people and so on. But just for our input so far, we greatly encouraged about the direction of the white paper. And we think it's been very brave to go there. All right. Let us take the input on the carbon footprint. And that's closely linked to the white paper.
Thank you, Chair. While Anna is setting up, I think this is one of the things that we just want to show that the department in its, in our way and what we're doing is trying to lift the policy and our commitment to lower the carbon footprint. Anna is going to present specifically on our findings of the carbon footprint. We still need to unpack our interventions in that regard quite a bit more. But I think it's also maybe just worth the mention that we, our negotiations about the new, our new accommodation in Pretoria has been delayed substantially as a result of our insistence on meeting green targets in the new building, in the design, in the operation of the new building. And there was resistance from the preferred bidder in that regard, and that delayed our process quite substantially. And we can, it's not yet totally finalized, but we can announce that when the Department of Environmental Affairs do have a new building, that it would be setting a benchmark in terms of government for carbon, water, waste management, that would really be an example to follow for government generally in terms of what can be achieved in terms of accommodation. Then, of course, apart from that, it's the policies around travel and the policies around our paper minimization and all of that that we need to continuously measure against the footprint, which Anna is going to present right now. Thanks, Chair. Anna.
You give me a warm, fuzzy feeling. Let me see how warm and how fuzzy it is. Explain to us, Anna, what you're doing.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, COO. Honorable members, good afternoon. As COO indicated, I will go through the process that we go through when we calculate the carbon footprint for the department, and then also present the findings in terms of the reporting for the cycle 2010-2011. We do the cycle, it's based on the financial cycle, so we do it, the footprint is from the 1st of April till the end of the financial year. So every year then we do the carbon footprint for that specific reporting cycle. The outline of my presentation, I would just do a quick background in terms of where the department is coming from with the initiative, and then look at the organizational boundaries, what are the activities that we look into when we calculate our carbon footprint, and then I will have then some few slides on the analysis of the results for the cycle 2010-2011, and some of the options for the for reduction. I think COO has already touched on some of the issues that the department is thinking along. In terms of the background, this...
Have you ever tabled this report in Parliament? Hey, you people, you know, you can do good work in the departments. You just mess it up. By not giving it, why, if you don't give it to Parliament, and Parliament doesn't see these things, how do you expect... Because now when I look at this report in 08, 09, 20, I've never seen such a report. Hey, you people must really wake up.
Gee, we actually, in our first two cycles, we were really refining the methodology, so we didn't even make the results known beyond the management of the department, because we want to make sure that the approach that we follow is something that we can ask other departments to follow. So the past two reports were informal internal reports. This report, we have confidence that our methodology is sound enough for us to make it public as the department's carbon footprint.
I hope the opposition tackle you on your secrecy.
They can. Certainly.
Secrecy. This is exactly why they're opposing the secrecy bill. It's reasons like this. You're hiding things away from us. When it's good issues, you can raise it. I'm only joking. Please go on with your input.
Thank you, Chairperson. As COO indicated, the management of the department basically made a decision in 2008 for us to then perform the carbon audit for the department, basically just to try and understand our carbon footprint as a result of our day-to-day activities. And we then put together a team that would then focus on the initiative. Then we did the first carbon footprint reporting for that financial year, which was 2008-09. Like COO indicated, we were still trying to comprehend the process, the methodology, so hence we didn't make too much noise about the process. But subsequent to the 2008-09 report, we then released the second generation of the carbon footprint report for the department. By then, we were still the Department of Environmental Affairs and Tourism. And then when we then split it, we realized that then we can use the two previous reports as our baseline reports, because now we have to, like, literally then take away the footprint for the tourism and the footprint for the fisheries that went to agriculture. So we are, as the department, we are seeing the 2010-2011 carbon footprint as then the comprehensive report that we would then use as a baseline to start keep tracking whether are we improving in terms of our carbon footprint for the department. Then the last bullet is just to highlight to members that we are looking at the international accounting reporting standards. So we're looking into the guidelines that are set internationally in terms of how to go about doing the process. What are the things that you need to look into account that I will talk to in my next slide. So the process that we followed in compiling the three report is well recognized. Then we're also using the guideline that was developed for the Department of Environment, Food and Rural Development in terms of trying to understand the emission factors that we use. Basically, the emission factors is we identify the activities that the department are involved in, and then we try to understand what would then be the carbon dioxide emission as a result of that activities. And for us to be able to calculate that, we need to do then the methodology in terms of the calculation. So you need your emission factors for you to be able to can calculate that final figure. So even the emission factors that we're using, they are also an international world standard that are known for the sake of also the comparison. And I think the key issue for the process is that we are guided by the principles. Basically, we are trying to look at the relevance we need as a department to reflect on the departmental emissions that would serve the decision-making needs for the users. So we don't just haphazardly then identify the activities, but the intention is to then have those policy interventions. And then we look also, the next principle being the completeness, basically looking at or accounting for and reporting all the emission sources and activities within the chosen inventory boundaries. Like, I will talk about the boundaries in my next slide, but we're trying to make sure that we identify all the activities that are as a result of our day-to-day operation as a department and make sure that we report according to that. And then consistency also is very important principle for us, because as I indicated, that the past two reports, then we can use them to compare whether we're doing best, because by that time we're still with tourism and fisheries. But the intention is then to have those standardized methodologies that we will then follow every financial year when we calculate the carbon footprint for the report, for the department, so that we are able to then see whether we're doing better or things are getting worse, or starting to look at the monitoring component of that. So consistency is very important for us. And also the principle on the transparency. The transparency, we're trying to be, we are open about the limitations that we would have through the process. If we calculate the footprint and then we don't have the activity data for a specific activity, we would disclose in the report that the end users must note that the final figure excludes the following activities, simply because collecting data for such a process is a bit challenging, especially when you start looking at the issues around the emission as a result of your computers, because you need to look at the computer, the lifespan in totality, the transportation, the manufacturing, the use, and the disposal. So it's not always where you would know then the activities or the emission as a result of then your transportation or your disposal, but we then try and look at what are the factors that we can calculate within the use of a specific computer. So those are the type of then limitations that you might have when you calculate the carbon footprint. And then also accuracy is very critical for us, in a sense that, like we're saying, that we're trying to ensure that the final product would then be a base for policy intervention. So we need to be as accurate as we could, and hence we are saying we're going to be transparent about what are the limitations that we experience when we calculated the footprint. And according to the reporting standards and guidelines, we then set as a team from the department and say, but why are we calculating the carbon footprint for the report? And then we came up with those four main goals. And then we said we, as a department, as the custodian of the environment, we want to improve our understanding of the emissions as a result of the day-to-day activities. And we also want to continuously identify the cost-effective reduction options, and with the intentions that after identifying them, obviously we would then have to look into the implementation and monitoring that those opportunities, and be able to can then reduce the carbon footprint for the department. And we also realize that this tool will then serve as a planning tool for the department as it develops the long-term strategies for the reduction of the environmental impact. So hence we're talking about the accuracy. We just want to make sure that it is as accurate as possible so that we can use it as part of our planning process. And also the plan is to, we're going to use the very same tool to serve as a model for other government departments as they are also tackling the issue of the climate change related issues. So what we're trying to do is with the past two reports, we're trying to comprehend the process, the methodologies, and say once we are confident that we can then roll out this, then we will share the knowledge and the experience with other government departments and also bringing on board the local government, like we've been discussing in the morning about how we can then get all three levels of government to participate in the process. When one does the carbon footprint calculation or audit, we need to indicate the boundaries that the activities are identified within. And then we looked at all the activities for the department, and hence we are then reflecting the structure of the department and saying, all the activities that are being carried out by all the branches within the department are considered, but they, as part of then being transparent about the limitation, we're indicating the fact that the Natural Resource Management Unit, since it only joined the department this financial year, that means when we did the carbon footprint calculation for the 2010-11, we didn't take into account their activities. So their emissions are not part of the report, the current presented report. And then also with the climate change and the ocean and coast, we also had limitations in terms of, for the ocean and coast, we didn't get information on the number of paper used, because what we do is we rely on our procurement processes. When people procure your reams of papers that they use for printing, then we use that to calculate the amount of emission as a result of then the printing. But then for the climate change, we couldn't get information on the number of papers that was used. And then for the ocean and coast, there was also...
Why couldn't you get...
They were not recorded. With the process, we try to use the recorded data.
Why isn't it recorded? CEO?
Yep.
What are you running a Mickey Mouse place there? What is your...
Yeah, I think it is it's a new branch, and we only actually established the branch in the beginning of this year as a formal branch. And this process actually pick up the places where there are holes. So obviously that is a correction measure. And I think the difficulty for us is that they are also, and Peter will tell you about this, they are currently not located in one location in the department. So some of the printing, for example, you would pick up in the air quality branch, because there's chair, there's climate change people located in the air quality branch physically. So they will be using that physical thing. So in trying to separate it, you would actually encourage double counting as well, because it's not a unit that functions in one geographical location. So most of it would be double counting, because we now can put the system in place when we have them all in one location, have the keywords that we can pass into the printers, etc., then we can record it. So I think the big thing is that they are located in different, for example, Dora that's doing climate change work, her printing would be counted under my branch. Peter that was doing would be in the air quality branch. So, and I think that is one of the just physical problems that we have for them.
Pambil.
Thank you, Chapter. I think what we said we will do is in the next round we will try and get system in place for us to be able to then collect some of the data that we've already identified the gaps in, and like COO indicated, we've noted the list of where we can improve. So with the next round, we should be able to then have every branch covered. When we go to the operational boundaries, after defining your organizational boundaries, we need to also define what are the operational boundaries that we're going to look into. And according to the reporting standard, there are three scopes that we need to look into. scope 1, which is all the emissions as a result of activities owned by the department or controlled by the department, that would then fall under scope 1, which is then your GG vehicles with, that is owned by the department, the Antarctic program, the research work that we're doing under the Antarctic program, and also the department also owns some of the refrigerators and the air conditioning units. Members would understand that when you're renting a building, you would then have a centralized air conditioning unit, but then at some offices, you would then have those standalone air conditioning units. So those ones are owned by the department because they are not part of the infrastructure of the landlord. So those ones, we account for them under scope 1, and hence, you members would see when we go to scope 3, we also have the air conditioning. But the ones that are under scope 3 are the ones that are then owned by the landlord. So for scope 1, it's those activities that are owned and controlled by the department, and we've identified those three activities. And then scope 2, it's purely your emission from the electricity consumption. So that is given that we need to then account in terms of the consumption as a result of electricity, that is linked to electricity. And then scope 3 are then your indirect emissions. So those activities that then department will perform but are not necessarily owned by the department or controlled by the department, but we're using such facilities for us to be able to perform our day-to-day work, then those ones will then fall under scope 3. And as indicated on the slide, then we've got the employee business travel. We do then do our international and domestic flight traveling. The flights are not owned by the department, but we're using the facilities for us to be able to do our day-to-day work, and hence we are accounting for our flight travel. Then we also have the subsidized vehicle where we've got our field workers who are doing the monitoring, the inspectorate. Then they've got then the subsidized vehicle. The department subsidized their vehicle. So we need to also account for the emission as a result of that. And then obviously when officials make, when they travel, when they fly, they would then need to rent cars. We also need to take into account the vehicle rental, the emission as a result of that. And then we also have the shuttle services where you would then have officials then being transported from the office to the airport for those who are not using the subsidized vehicle or they are not part of the SMS who've got their own vehicle, so then they will get to be shuttled to the airport. So we also take into account those emission as a result of that. And then we also have the senior management that would then do, they've got their own private vehicles, but then they have the obligation to do then official travel trips for them to be able to perform their day-to-day basis. So their day-to-day activities, we also take into account the emission as a result of that. And then as part of the process, it is recognized that the employee commuting, the staff traveling from home to work and from work to home is also part of the business. So we need to also take into account the emission as a result of that traveling pattern of staff. Hence, we've got employee commuting as part of then the activities identified under scope 3. So under that, what we would then do is we would then get the employees within the department to complete a questionnaire. We will structure a questionnaire that would ask them how are they getting to work, how many people, if they're using a car, are they traveling together or are they traveling individually, are they using a bus or a train. If they're using a car, we would want to understand the capacity of the car, the fuel type that the car uses, and then with that we will then be able to calculate that emission for the traveling pattern of the staff. And then we also look into the paper, the photocopying, as I indicated, that that's one area that we are working on in terms of improving, in terms of understanding the emission as a result of our printing. There are two ways for one to measure emission in relation to the papers. Number one is you either look at then the printing, the photocopy, the day-to-day printing that we would do in the office. Then we also can consider the publications that the department produces. If we do the report and then we publish a 500-page document, the tool allow us to be able to understand what are the emissions that are in line with such publication. But for this process, we are finding a bit challenging to account for the printing of the publications, your flyers, because then it's done by an external institution, and then trying to then to get to understand the papers that was used, and it's a bit challenging. So for the purpose of this cycle, this reporting cycle, we only looked at the printing that is done within the department. And then also under scope three, we've got generators. Obviously when then we currently rent in the building. If the lights have to go off, we do have a backup generator, so we need to also account for the emission as a result of that backup time that we use to that generator. And as I indicated on my introduction, we also look into the lifespan of the computers, what are the emissions as a result of that, and the air conditioning, as I indicated, the ones that are now part of the infrastructure that is owned by then the landlord would then fall under scope three. So after understanding, okay, this is the boundary that we're going to use, this is the cycle, we stick into the financial year cycle, these are the activities that we've identified within different scopes, and then we will then start collecting the data from different sources within the department and also externally, because externally we do have the service providers that would then do our flight arrangement, so they would have then the details of who to get to where, the distance and stuff like that, and then the car rentals also, they would also have such information. So we would then go to the service providers and get the information of such activities. And then internally, as we indicated, we would then, like the papers, we would then go to the procurement section and try to understand the number of reams that was used for the whole financial year. And then we would also go to our building and facilities to try and understand how many air conditioning do we have in the building, our electricity bills. So the data collection is done internally and externally. And then after then gathering that data, that's when we would then use the emission factor that I talked about. We would then set up the macros and set up the formulas to do the calculation for the specific areas that are listed under the scopes that I have outlined to on the slide.
Okay, now you put that in a lot of detail. What I want you to do now is under each of these items, just tell us under each one the tons or the percentage of carbon dioxide. So don't go through all the slide. Just on GG vehicles was 38.33 tons of COO. Air conditioning,
we've got 1664.
Don't worry about those details.
Oh, okay.
10.43 tons.
Yeah. And then the freezers and the refrigerators, we've got, they've emitted 15.12 tons.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Antarctic program, it contributes significantly because of the vessels that we have. They've contributed to 42.83% of the total emissions.
8,115.2 tons.
Yes. Because we then looked at also the base, where then
for the whole program.
Yes. And then when we go to scope two, the electricity is only one activity. It contributed 38.39% to the total emission.
7,000. Now I'm telling you, if you put off the lights when I drive past that building of yours, I see all those lights are on every night. If you just put off half that light, you'll decrease this tremendously by next year. So I hope you're personally going to take responsibility that these lights are switched off. If I drive past there, I'm going to photograph and see which lights are on. And I'm going to let you come here next time and tell me whose office that is. Okay. Is that a deal, Anna? Is that a deal? You're going to take responsibility for this.
Yes, we'll raise our
you want to be the example, I'm going to make you the example. This department. I want to see if that Errol Makova's lights are on, for example. Okay. Hey, I might tell you, civil servant working late is a contradiction in terms. Huge contradiction in terms. Now, MP, I understand, but civil servant, yes. Okay, Anna, you've got your marching orders. If I ever photograph that building and I see lights on, there's going to be accountability. Okay? You must tell the other staff. Now, that's the building I'm talking about, the one that uses 6,094 CO2 units. That's the one I'm talking about. Look at the others are small. Yeah, well, it doesn't matter. Big lights. That's your problem. Big lights in a big office. Okay, next one. So lights we can decrease by half, right? And then,
scope three, we go to the air travel. Air travel also.
Ooh! Look at this. You people travel a lot, eh? I don't know why your lights are on if you're traveling so much. 1,841. Yee, this is serious, man. I think this is the COO alone does half of it, half of that traveling.
The international discussions and policy crafting and it also contributes for the benefit of the future generation.
I suppose half of this was caused by the white paper on climate change. All right, next one. Scope 3 emissions.
Scope 3 emission, then we've got the rental. They contribute 5 months. Yes. It's then when we travel. Then the shuttle services.
Shuttle services, 62 tons. Phew!
Yes.
Yeah, if you people stayed more in your office, kept your lights off and didn't fly, just imagine. This would be nothing. Management official travel, 77 tons. Actually, this is fascinating, I must tell you. I find this very fascinating. If we were able to break down most of South Africa like this, we'd be able to very much see where the problems are. Do any other departments do this?
I know of they've consulted us, they wanted us to assist them in doing that. But the plan is also, as soon as we're confident, then we will assist other department in rolling out the
fascinating, very fascinating. So management official travel is 77, subsidized vehicles are 122, scope 3, office paper, 31 tons. Staff commuting, 967 tons. Computers, 276 kilograms. Okay, that's not too bad, at least not a ton.
Computers, if Czech could remember, then we account for also on the electricity side, because I kept then they're using the electricity, so they've been accounted for also at scope 2.
Oh, air conditioning, 132. Generator, half a ton. All right, move to that one now. Now, talk further from there.
This is the last slide, Chairperson.
Mm-hmm.
The slide basically summarized the figures that we had, that we discussed in the previous slide. What we did is then we've got the scope one, we listed them and tried to then quickly see if one wants to see which one is contributing more. And by looking at the table, then we can see that the Antarctic program is our the key contributor, in a sense that it's contributing 42.83% of the total. And then it's followed by then the electricity, and then followed by under scope 3, it's followed by the flight, the domestic and international flight. So those are our key drivers.
Exactly what I said.
Yes.
If you stay in your office, keep your lights off, then the only footprint we'll have is the gullus.
And then the total footprint then being that 18.947, considering every...
Almost 19,000. It's fascinating. All right, options for reductions?
Options for reductions, as the COO indicated, that we've got a limited we're a bit challenged in terms of implementing some of the initiatives because of the fact that we are currently renting most of the offices. And as a result, when we get your electricity bills and your water, and that's why we're not even accounting for the water, because then the bills are they're in a manner that one is can confidently say that 100% of the data that is given is for the department, because then the building has been shared by the department and other institutions. But as soon as then we get an opportunity to be at the new building, then we should be able to then implement some of the exciting things for us to be able to monitor things like the electricity. But I think
how
the
many staff do you have?
The staff, when we did this, we've got a complement of, I think it was 950 plus.
So about
950
people, yes. Generate 19,000 tons.
With all activities.
Okay.
If I could just add one little bit.
Mm.
I think where we have shot ourselves in the foot by not having the previous results, even though they might not have been 100% accurate before you, is that some of these figures that you see now is after interventions, like, for example, our security services switch off lights at 7 o'clock at night when they do the lock-up of the floors. We have totally disabled electric geysers in all of our bathrooms. We don't have that anymore. We also have our aircon on a time switch that switch off. So all of that was interventions after our first audit that we did. So I think the difficulty is just that you would be comparing apples with bananas, because it's a different organization almost that you're looking at if we compare with who we were.
When you usually compare apples with bananas, you get monkeys.
Exactly. So we would need to, I think that is why it's important to do the next audit in such a way that you could see what is the contribution of NRM when we add it on top of ours, so that we can still use these figures as a benchmark overall for us to measure us against.
No, I think you guys must table the report so that we have it as a benchmark, and then in the future we can do it properly. Okay, questions? As I say, I find this very fascinating, because it really in life shows, if you break life down, what it is we're doing to the world. In terms of emissions. Mr. Morgan, Mr. Matebe.
Thanks, Chair. I certainly enjoy your banter with the department, and I think in doing this, and I know you are, we need to be very conscious, of course, as parliamentarians about our own carbon footprints, and I know you are. Just a couple of comments. I don't have any specific questions. I think, firstly, this is a very good initiative. Yes, it should be rolled out across departments, governments, spheres of government, and I'm sure there are ultimately plans to do that. Unless we know what the baseline is of what we emit or are responsible for emitting, there's very little we can do to work out where we're going to mitigate. So that is all very good. And I'm also going to keep an eye on light shining around. But I mean, let me make a personal point. This is a very interesting thing, and let me make a point about us, because, you know, in this respect, actually, as the coordinator of the climate change response, well, until we know otherwise, we have to look at Parliament as well. And I did a personal assessment starting in 2007 of what it means to be a parliamentarian who lives a two-hour flight away from Cape Town. Of course, Chairperson, you don't have this problem, so perhaps you do have the moral high ground on this. But, you know...
My carbon footprint is very low.
It is very low, yeah.
I travel from Pinelands to Parliament.
And you travel very slowly.
As well. Well, that's it.
But, look, I mean, this is public knowledge. I mean, MPs, the average... Well, MPs get somewhere something like 8 single journeys a year by air, which is significantly more than I'm sure Ms. McCourt gets. Not that they probably prescribe it. But we all do, whether we live in Johannesburg or Durban or Polokwane or Port Elizabeth. The only difference, of course, is the length of our journey, because that has an impact on our carbon. And I worked out using a very basic carbon calculator that my own personal carbon footprint was, I might get it wrong by a ton or two, was in excess of 30 tons a year. And that is because of flying. And there's only so much we can do as parliamentarians. The way Parliament is structured is that we're expected to be in our constituencies on Mondays and we're expected to be in Parliament on a Tuesday. And if there is a there's a perverse incentive, that's the only way you can achieve that is, of course, if you fly between your constituencies. It's not feasible to drive. And hence, one of the things we're going to have to do as parliamentarians, Chairperson, when we respond to climate change, is actually think about restructuring our parliamentary program so that perhaps we meet more intensively in Cape Town, stay here weekends, and then have extended periods of time in our constituencies. In order to reduce our carbon footprints and, you know, cost savings as well. So I think there's some thoughtfulness that all of us can do, parliamentarians, but also the Speaker's office and all of that. Because I know there's a Greening of Parliament initiative which is going on, and I'm a big, massive supporter of it. But and I haven't seen the results of it. But I would imagine 450 parliamentarians are in a NCOP, each with 80 single flights a year. Plus all the staff, you know, who live less. I mean, it's only the Western Cape MPs who would probably use that entitlement a lot less, because they'd live in driving distance in most cases from Parliament. But for the MPs from the other 8 provinces, you can imagine what the carbon footprint of this organization is likely to be. Anyway, it's something we must confront and be completely honest about going forward. So as much as the chairperson gives you guys a hard time, as the, you know, Mr. Lukey and everyone else, you the custodians of the climate change response, there'll be a time when you have to say to us, you know, you guys have a carbon footprint which is 11 times greater than the average South African. You know, what are you going to do about it? Anyway, so I say that in jest as well, but there's something we all have to be very, very thoughtful about. Thanks, Jim.
There's some MPs that, of course, contribute very little to that footprint, but okay, they still contribute. That's important to know. Now, I really would, the things you're saying, Mr. Morgan, I would love to let Parliament do this. Because it's only if it does this that we can year on year see how we trying to look for ways to decrease it that we'll actually start doing something about it. Otherwise, there's just no incentive. I mean, you'd say, this is how parliaments always work, so we're going to keep on working like that, and there'll be no incentives to do it. So, I mean, this is one of, probably another recommendation we can make, that Parliament within a year should create a carbon footprint report, and so that we can actually engage with it. And then we can tell these MPs that drive so far and fly so much that they must really start cutting down, because they really burdening this carbon footprint in this parliament. Okay, that was a comment. Mr. Matebe?
Thank you, sir. Let me also thank the department for this wonderful presentation, sir. I think this shows that they are very much serious in being an exemplary to other departments. You will be a point of reference. Thank you very much for that. But I must also indicate that I'm a bit worried by something here on staff committees.
Actually, this is one report that hasn't got staff bonuses in it.
They stated here that as of January this year, they had 935 full-time staff members, but only 166 attended information sessions. So why such a smaller number? Is it maybe others were not interested or were so busy that they didn't have time to attend this session?
Thank you, Chairperson. The staff traveling pattern, the information session was basically on, the focus was on trying to get the staff to understand why we want to calculate their traveling pattern so that they are part of the final figure of the departmental footprint. So we needed that kind of buy-in from the staff because some staff members might perceive their traveling pattern as private information because it's from my home, so I need to literally populate where my home is. So we needed to get that engagement in terms of making them understand why it's important for them to release such information and make sure that they also understand that that information will be then held confidentially. And then also taking advantage of that to raise the awareness of the activities that we can do after understanding the carbon footprint for the department. In 2008-09 process, we also did the same information session. And the understanding is majority of the people then participated at that information session, and majority of the people understand the rationale behind the carbon audit, and then the questionnaire that we crafted was straightforward for most of the employees. So they felt that there was no need for them to come for the information session to be taken through that
questionnaire
process.
The questionnaire was only filled in by 565 people.
Chairperson, yes, but we must say it's an improvement as compared to the previous cycle. The previous cycle, we were less than
Anna,
half.
This is simple. You make this part of their contract of employment. That's simple. That's all you do. You just make it part of their contract of employment. That they must fill this in. This is for the good of the country. It's got nothing to do with privacy. We don't want to know who they sleep with. We're asking how far they drive every day to work. That's what we're asking. Got nothing to do with privacy issues. And, you know, if they don't want to, if only 500 is filling this in, you must make it part of their employment contract. I mean, I wouldn't want to, if we have to do that in Parliament, and we make it voluntary and people can fill it in if they want to. That's not the issue. The issue is that we need to get the correct information. And this is nothing personal we want to know from people. I mean, how far do you travel to work? What's personal about that? Unless you were sleeping in the wrong bed. You know, that could be a problem, of course, but, I mean, that's only for one day, hopefully. Really, I don't find it acceptable that this thing is voluntary. This thing must be part of the working environment of any staff member, that these records must be kept properly. And that's the only way in government we're going to do it properly. Otherwise, it's going to always be voluntary. I mean, just by having 935 staff members and only 370 of them are not filling it in.
Chair, I think I understand what you're saying, and we can do that in terms of the scope 1 and scope 2 because that's things that are directly within our control. We can, in terms of the travel request that is approved and the claims, we have that direct information. But in terms of scope 3, we work on generally acceptable statistical processes where you have a sample consider in this case the sample is more than representative in terms of statistical standards, and then extrapolate from there. So you know what percentage of your staff stay what distance, what percentage drive what caliber of car, and you are not held hostage by individuals completing these reports.
Make it part of
you can make
it part of their contract of employment. See, oh, you really worry me when you say you can't make it part of their contract of employment.
So tell me what type of car you drive.
Part of your contract of employment will be that you will be obliged to fill in every year the information that is necessary for us to conduct our carbon emissions footprint of the department. That's your contract of employment. I mean, it's simple. In a contract of employment is something that is an obligation that is created through... So it's not saying, you know, I want to know which car you drive. You say you will be obliged to provide the information that is necessary for this department to work out its carbon footprint every year. That's the simple thing. Okay, let's not discuss this anymore. I must let the CEO get her mind around this. She's far too liberal in her interpretation of staff rights. Okay, now other questions? Sir?
Who's responsible for the maintenance of your air conditions? Is it your department or public works? And how often are they being maintained?
That's a loaded question.
Yeah. Chair, I can...
Public works. Neither public and it doesn't work, so...
Yeah.
I hope the TV is not on.
Chair,
what is the department?
It's not the department, apart from the loose units, which are in... and they are maintained annually. The rest it's neither, because it is through a lease with the landlord, because we are leasing the building through public works, but it is in the lease agreement how frequently it gets maintained. I know it was just maintained now because they were in my office for 3 days to fix mine, but it is part of our lease agreement. 3 days to get access to the unit that they need to service. So it is. It's a part of this building that has been retrofitted, that was built for a different purpose. It's been retrofitted, that we are leasing from a landlord under conditions that were set quite a while ago. The lease needs to get extended in time for the building.
But you now opened up the floodgates
so
to give reasons why they're motivating for their own building.
No, Chair, that motivation is done. We don't have to do that again. I think the issue is just that it is a third party, it's a lease agreement via public works, which means that the control that we have is really very, very limited.
Look, I am very proud of the department that you're doing this. Whatever shortcomings there are, they can be strengthened, but I think this is a really great example. And it's something we would hope that you emulate, that you perfect, and that you get other departments to do as well. Because it's, and including Parliament, we will push also for Parliament to do it. Because it's only by doing things like this that we will meaningfully start changing people's behavior. I know for a fact that it was only once the electricity started going off and facts were brought to my attention that I changed some things in my own life. I now diligently switch off lights, whereas previously I used to be absolutely like every other South African. Whether you do it or not, it doesn't matter. But suddenly, I really, and the big difference is my daughter now would absolutely tell us about the things. So it just shows you, if you want to change behavioral patterns, it actually starts with very small things. You know, and it starts with all of us. So I'm very proud of this work that the department is doing. And I want you to advertise this widely. I want you to make your report available with whatever weakness is in it. It doesn't matter. It is ground-setting work that you're doing. Okay? Brilliant. Anna, excellent. Now, of course, I'm going to still keep you liable for the... If I go past and I hear you switching off your lights at 7 o'clock at night, I must drive past there after 7 and those lights are on. Oh, I'm telling you. All right, very well done. Excellent. Quickly, 5 minutes. Have a 5-minute break and then we'll take the last input for the day. Huh?
Thank you.
as well. Well, that, I mean, that would be at least 20,000. That will be 20,000. All right, we'll have a 5-minute break for you to go to dark, dingy places. And then we'll take the last input. Ah, you're on his number again, huh?
Number one, Leangom. but you sit down, eat your lunch.
Barker. Minister Barker. The Minister of Climate Change. It's the colonizer. The people used to colonize this country. They're now coming to talk to us. Okay, 5 minutes, not 5 hours. Please call people back.
Come and see in Durban what we are doing, so that's okay. The purpose of this presentation is just really to link it to the implementation, the showcasing around things around what come out of the policy. So I'm not going to talk about the design of the expo and all of that. I'm more going to talk about the side events and the events and the showcasing project. So just to remind us why we are doing the expo is that in us hosting COP17, that is South Africa, there is the formal negotiations, the things that happened in the UN precinct, which is actually only open to accredited people, which include the negotiators, the formal delegations, recognized major groups and agencies. So the, inside the precinct, only those that are accredited have access to what happened in the precinct, and that includes the UN accredited side events. The rest of the country, which are all very interested in this, fall outside of these two categories, and therefore we decided to cater for them through this whole outreach program, the provincial summits that that took place, the outreach and awareness program, which will then culminate in this climate change response expo, and then the coinciding events. And I will talk only about the local government program as a coinciding event. And this, the expo is really the opportunity to engage, to forge partnerships, and to showcase, mainly, to showcase the, our country, our business, our government's response to climate change, both in terms of mitigation and adaptation. In terms of the approved UNFCCC side events, those are those side events that take place inside the UN precinct. Government of South Africa was allowed only 3 such side events. So there was quite a rigorous process to see what are the three side events that we as government will use within the precinct. The first one is this very important thing that came out of the presentation this morning by Mr. Lukey, is this importance of measuring, reporting, and verification, and continuously be in that cycle of measuring, reporting, and verification. And that would be one of the best practice presentations that we would have, and it falls within the mitigation category generally. The second one, where we will be focusing more on the adaptation category, is the one that is looking specifically at our oceans, our climate oceans program. And it will highlight the direct link between climate change, the health of oceans, and human well-being, and the need for collaborative action and sufficient funding for strategic mitigation and adaptation to minimize the climate change impact on the coastal communities and on our ocean resources. And that is the second already approved UNFCCC side event. The third side event that government will be hosting at the UNFCCC is the cities program, the local government combating climate change. The policies that they have adopted, how they are looking at policy and technical approaches, and this is looking at our major cities and is co-hosted by Cities Network and SALGA as that very big local government response process. So those are the three events that we will be having in the precinct as part of the UN process. Then outside of the precinct, or what we term here inside the Climate Change Response Expo, which is currently looking like that, you will see the location we have after lots of fighting with both Itikwini, or lots of negotiation with both Itikwini and Zirko, have secured the spot that we think is a very strategic spot. You will see that it is between the transportation hub and the accreditation facility. So it's basically a thorough way that people would need to go through in order to get into the UN precinct. So you have that closeness. It's this, the one with the central bit. On the slide there, you will see on the left you have a grey, which is the transportation hub. Then you have the busy middle bit. And then on the right you have the accreditation bit. And the bit in between is the expo, which exists out of a lot of big, huge tents, small tents, open spaces. But I'm not going to talk much about the design. We're starting construction towards the end of the month, and we are totally on target with the design, the allocation of space, etc. We have received, we are almost overprescribed in terms of what we can offer in the space that has been allocated to us. We have received 255 requests for that include exhibition and side events and small little conferences, etc. So what we would allow avail in addition to exhibition space is we have one big conference room, we have two meeting rooms that can accommodate 150 people, two boardrooms that can accommodate 30 people, and a cocktail venue that can accommodate 300 people. And we will obviously rent out that space and recover some of the costs. In the exhibition space, there will be, as I said, we've received this lot of expressions of interest, and unfortunately, Lucy had to leave for the press briefing, but there's a whole spreadsheet that we are currently allocating the space that we do have available, but that will be anchored. The anchored presentation will be this flagship government project that will also demonstrate the legacy of holding this. Now, we, in choosing these 10 government projects, we have looked at criteria, and I think it's important to know what these criteria are. The first and most important one is contribution to the national climate change policy response. In other words, is it aligned with the white paper, and will it demonstrate our response as it is in the white paper? The second one was around localization and specifically the potential to develop a manufacturing base or maintenance base in terms of components, assembling, maintenance, etc., and to create SMMEs that can do this work. The job creation potential was incredibly important to us. the extended use of local agencies and programs, and harmonization of local stakeholders. So the local is lacquer type of approach in terms of how we look at this. The ability to have high impact in terms
Cook
of emission reduction.
Cook
sisters
and Mount Tabs and Boerewors. There's only stands we want. Cook sisters, Mount Tabs and Boerewors.
And Tribe.
And Tribe.
Yes.
And Pop.
Tribe and Pop.
Okay.
And Stump, yes. And the ability to have high impact in terms of emission reduction, rural development, things that would stimulate, if we roll it out, these flagship projects to economic development in rural areas. Replicability, we don't want to have something that is a fantastic idea but that cannot be easily replicated. Sustainability, something that can be sustained in the long term, both in terms of time, people, self-sufficiency, and bankability, that this would attract finance and be able to generate financial sustainability. Ability to attract foreign funding as well as an ability to be attractive to the green fund, the jobs fund, all of these government-generated funds. And then the impact on the climate change energy policy in regards to the demand-side management. And lastly, the last criteria that we looked at is the ability to elevate our position on climate change in terms of a fair and equitable response to this, so enhance our political aspirations. The 10 projects that we chose, the first one is the mass rollout of the solar water heaters system, that is both in terms of research, awareness, creation, marketing, training, and skills development. And that exhibition, as well as the side event and conferences around that concept, will be the responsibility of the Department of Economic Development. Then a comprehensive community solar energy project, the one in the Northern Cape, is being looked at, and this is specifically for communities using solar energy and potentially also eventually linking onto the grid. That's the Department of Energy. The Ceres Wind Farm, also the Department of Energy. The energy efficient lighting that is being used in Itakwini already in terms of the streetlight pilot project will be looked at as the fourth project. Large scale solar that the PV development in terms of solar, photovoltaic, solar energy park concept, and the Ikurileni Solar Park will also be on demonstration there. That shouldn't be, Ikurileni will be showcasing that. The dual car is the Department of Science and Technology's project. National Climate Innovation Center, that is also from the Economic Development Department. The Mzansi Green from Department of Science and Technology. It's this EduRoot house in terms of having a house that can be sustainable in itself. Low energy, modular, low cost housing. Ikurileni will be also be showcasing that. And then lastly, the Food and Energy Center of Excellence, the household fruit tree establishment in mass in low cost housing projects. And that is done together by the Department of Environmental Affairs as part of our green economy projects. In addition to these 10 flagships, of course, they are all of the industry's best practice being showcased, etc. And then we have specific, so those are the flagship projects, and then we have projects that are aimed at greening COP17. And that is done with Itakwini, to make sure that we calculate the carbon footprint of COP17 and measure the effectiveness of our interventions around this event greening, which is more once-off, while the previous ones were more legacy projects that will continue afterwards. We have developed a COP17 greening concept note, which was shared with the host city and with all of the partners that are participating in this. We also have the COP17 specific event greening guideline, which was distributed. And then we have done event greening guidelines for each one of the work streams. So we've looked at greening accommodation and venues, greening the expo, greening transport, safety and security, which is an interesting learning process in terms of greening safety and security, and then also looking at the greening of the communications as also. Those are the five work streams that we've looked at in the greening process. In terms of waste management, these are just some of the highlight projects that we are embarking on. The province, the hosting province, KZN, has embarked on a major coastal cleanup extending from Nkomas, that's the south coast, to Bolito, the north coast. And the KZN Premier also announced a river cleanup program at the provincial summit. And we are still awaiting the detail of where they are with that from the province. We've also had a recycling program being run in conjunction with Wildlands Conservation Trust with the waste exchange for food security in various wards of the Itikwini municipality. In terms of water conservation and management, there's a solar water heater and rainwater harvesting project underway in the province, and we will also measure its impact for this. In terms of energy efficiency and renewable energy, together with Itikwini, our department have a formal process for expression of interest for the offset of greenhouse gases associated with COP17, with criteria around company and products, and that is in its final phase. It must be concluded by the end of this month. And we're also considering both donations and purchase opportunities around the carbon offsets. In terms of investigation, there's also investigation of biomass from sugar industry for inclusion in the local energy mix, which is underway, which may not be viable yet at COP itself, but it is something that is being incorporated into the system in the long term to green events at the Durban Convention Center. And the buyback tariff is just something that still needs to be, as you know, there's a whole process with the Department of Energy around the contract that's coming to an end of this, the bidding process that comes to the end of this month, that will be replacing the refit process previously embarked on. We are also working with the National Department of Tourism on greening hospitality, and that is done in partnership with Eskom. One of the members mentioned the Eskom process earlier. We actually have done roadshows in all the provinces. Only outstanding is Western Cape and Gauteng. Our understanding is that people will, before or after COP, not only visit Durban and surrounds, but there will be also other provinces that will be visited, and we need to showcase that we can green our hospitality industry. A responsible accommodation campaign is linked to that, and in that regard, we have established a minimum standard for responsible tourism. And we are also in the process with a responsible visitor charter, which will be given to all of the visitors that come, asking them what we, as a country, where they need to leave their carbon footprint as small as possible, what they need to do in order to do that. In terms of biodiversity management, of course, there's a tree planting of 1 million trees during COP. And that was announced at the KZN Climate Change Summit, and that process, the trees have been secured. It's all indigenous trees in order to plant that as part of the carbon offset of the event. And then, of course, we will continue with our Working 4 programs, and they will be also showcasing around the Working 4 programs, water, wetlands, and the coast specifically in terms of biodiversity. I think it's important that Itikwini, as the host city, is calculating the local carbon footprint for the event. They are by the 24th of this month, they would have the estimate of what they foresee that carbon footprint to be, and then after the event, we would be able to measure whether we have actually met or exceeded that footprint, and whether our interventions in order of greening the event was actually successful. So we are collecting data also for the pre-COP activities, and we are will be continuously to collect data around the COP to see what the footprint actually was. In terms of carbon reduction, we have secured 700 bicycles to be used in the city of Durban. 300 is sponsored by the department. 200 will be provided by the city and 200 by the Department of Transport.
Hey, you know it's summer.
Yes.
You know it's summer. We're going to be there in the middle of summer when it's the hottest in Durban and you want to ride bicycles. Yay! You need rickshaws, man, not bicycles.
Chair, I think we can learn from India and China where they do that when it's hot or cold.
India, China, not Durban, which is a subtropical climate in summer.
I think that for me, Chair, the not so nice part of this is that we haven't afterwards these bicycles. It's for me not being integrated into the public transport system of Durban. It's going to be for the event, and thereafter it will be donated to school children, which is not bad, but I think it would be good if we could couple our public transport with bicycles on hire, etc., which is something that we still need to think through. We'll give you training wheels.
Give you tricycles. Tricycles with three wheels.
Then the city is currently undertaking a formal process for expression of interest for the deduction. I spoke about that before. And the draft, we will be knowing the results of this by early next week. I think just based on Honourable Tebe's questions earlier, I've inserted this and upset the team back in the office quite a bit, to talk a little bit about the work that we're doing with local government, specifically for COP17, because we agree that it is at that grassroots implementation level where the changes must happen, and we've therefore formed a strong partnership with SALGA and Cities Network to make a local government COP program get off the ground, so we're providing them with quite a bit of support. I think the local government process started in Bali already, where there was a roadmap kind of mapped, and I won't go into the details as we are already in the graveyard session. Just to say that for Durban, we're looking at a strong and comprehensive agreement to allow for tangible local government action. And that is what the local government lobby through ICLEI, Cities Network, is moving towards for Durban. So they are making both process inputs. In terms of process input, COP17 is considered by the local government community to be the World Cup of climate change. So it is the people on the ground that should get the ultimate prize, is how they view it. So we've done intensive provincial stakeholder mobilization across all levels, and we have especially targeting the youth. That is the local government program, not we supported it. So the stakeholder mobilization to be coupled with the participation at the expo, and at COP there will be a specific local government pavilion. And as part of the program during Itikwini's hosting of the summit, there is the mayoral summit will be hosted as an important side event of COP. In terms of the Global Cities Governance on Climate Change, which is part of the Bali Roadmap process, they have committed themselves to reduction of local greenhouse gases through voluntary processes, adoption and implementation of local mitigation measures, development of local adaptation strategies, registration of emissions and actions in the carbon registry in a measurable, reportable, verifiable, viable manner. That's a long sentence, but that is what they have committed themselves to, and seek mechanisms to allow direct access to international finance for local action with support of national governments and international partners. They're also looking at promoting involvement of civil society through local government action, adopt and seek partnerships with national governments and multilateral institutions on local action, and spread the message of local action. So the local government agenda for COP17 is very much in terms of local action, both in terms of mitigation and adaptation. They've also introduced the Global Cities Governance on Climate Change and the Carbon Registry, recognition of local government as a key government stakeholder in global climate efforts, references to local government in other key outcomes is important. terms of the local LCA. That acronym will come back to me now. And then obviously their involvement in the cleaner development mechanism rollout process and for getting local government to have access to CDM, not only industrial activities. Durban and local government, our local government, SALGA, will lead example in showing the results of local action in the climate registry. In other words, they will record what we are doing through our local government. They will launch the process and adaptation program of action to be finalized, that was finalized in June 2011, and they would actually popularize that process at the COP. And then they would really seek for COP to recognize the importance and how central local government is in terms of assuring that action takes place locally in order to both ensure mitigation and adaptation at appropriate levels. In Durban, there will be a local government pavilion. It will be part of the expo that I've talked about. It is also in the form of a tent, and you have kind of a schematic there with above the Tree of Hope what the local government pavilion will look like. They actually have secured quite a bit of funding with our assistance from Siemens, who will... the solar energy panels that they have secured already and that is being constructed at this moment that will contribute to the energy supply of their pavilion and as well as the Tree of Hope. I'll talk a little bit about the Tree of Hope later. They are supporting the World Bio Summit, which is happening during COP17. We're still waiting for the date to be confirmed by the UN Secretariat. The African Green City Index press conference is happening during December, early part of December. There's a sustainable city show happening as part of the expo. We also involve the very young through two exciting processes. The one is the kids drawing competition, and the other one that is actually sponsored by LEGO is a challenge to the youth to build their ideal future city with LEGO blocks, and that is happening as part of this expo. There is the Tree of Hope, which is in a baobab form that will be in the Gugu Dlamini Park. Those of you that are familiar with this, is Gugu Dlamini Park has been established in Isikweni, in Durban, close to this expo site, around acceptability of people with all race and sexual preferences. And this was built in honor of Gugu Dlamini. And the Tree of Hope will be very symbolically be in that place. There's also an e-chopper and e-car exhibition. I took the details out of the presentation because we still want you to be surprised by some of the things. So I'm not going to show you what this looked like. But the e-chopper and e-car is basically an innovative way in terms of looking what travel can look like in the future in order to reduce our carbon footprint. And then there's also a whole lot of outreach and advertisement in local and international media. That is more or less what it would look like. I think the important thing about the look and feel of the pavilion is that the material that it's made of is of such a way that you can do projections on the inside and the outside, so it can be a live advertisement and show while it is standing there in Durban. Just in terms of the Tree of Hope, it is a symbol that represents protection, food, community, participation, and harmony, what the baobab has become known for in Africa. And it says that only by taking action together can we ensure the future delivers enough for all for generations to come. The baobabs, as you would know, some of the baobabs in South Africa is more than 2,000 years old, so it's kind of a symbol of spreading across generations and continue to providing shade, food, and fuel. The lights on the baobab tree will be powered partially, as I said, by the solar panels, but it's also powered, and you can see that in the picture below, by manpower, where you can sit on a bicycle, generate electricity. The electricity that you generate will light up a bulb or two on the tree, and it's kind of a...
It's your kind of bicycle.
It's a standing storm. So it's symbolizing this hope and this thing about that it will require work from all of us to light up this tree. And I think that is the symbolism around the tree of hope. Thank you, Chair. As I said, this is not everything that the expo is about. It's just kind of linking
that
back
very
to the,
exciting.
To the white paper.
Anyone got any general points to make? It's more of an information just to tell us what's happening, but anyone? No, we think that looks wonderful. I think just, I think you've got a few slots to do it, but now that we've got a white paper, I think those areas where government is doing it, I think very clearly you should be able to reflect the main points of our policy on the white paper now for climate change. So that it's, I mean, we've created that white paper. I think we should advertise it there, and we should have space. I think if you look at the first two flagship, I thought it could be done there. Mm-hmm. And then there's another with your top. And there's a lot of other programs also. One is specifically to do with the policy.
Yeah, that's in the UN, in the precinct. The local government.
Yeah, no, that's the criteria. Yeah. One of the criteria. But on those two flagship things, I think when, you know, you're dealing with government issues, I really think we should prominently summarize the main points of it, that we have now a fixed target, which will be in the form of that curve or trend or whatever we call it, so that we meet our scientific blah, 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 that we'll have a carbon budget, you know, all those type of things, so that it's very clear what the policies are. Okay, that's it. I think that was a wonderful input today. I am absolutely delighted that we, and very proud as a country, that we've been able to put together a policy, that we've got this nice carbon footprint we're doing in the department, and the work that's been done around the expo is excellent. I really am very proud of what we've done.
You've asked Mr. Lukey for...
Okay. This is the document that explains to you the peak and the plateau. Remember I said they shouldn't have it on the computer, we should have it. So just that members have copies of it, okay? It's going to be handed out. All right, so we'll continue tomorrow at 11 o'clock. 11 o'clock in room... Committee Room 1, the public meeting will continue at 11 o'clock in Committee Room 1 in 120 Plain Street. It's a horrible, dingy, horrible room that I don't know why Chilega got it for us, which hardly seating for us with a long table. Maybe Chilega would be able to convince committee section to give us a different venue before tomorrow. We'll let you know. But at this stage, it's Committee Room 1, 120 Plain Street. Also, those people that have committed for the lunch tomorrow, please just remember the lunch. It's quite a few people from Britain, plus our committee, plus some of the department people that are here, that will go for the lunch, okay? That is all for now. Anything else? Anything else from members? Okay, so Ms. McCourt, can I thank you and the department, and we'll see you tomorrow. I actually thought it probably would be better to do the NPC first, but if you've told Treasury to be here first, that's fine, okay? But I think just logically the NPC, which explained generally, should probably be first. So definitely tomorrow we'll do the NPC, National Planning Commission, to come and give us all the work they're doing on climate change. And we'll receive the Department of Treasury will give us the input on the carbon tax, okay? Thank you. 11 o'clock. 11 o'clock, Committee Room 1. Charlie, you'll explain, and Gareth, you'll explain to Dr. Collier. Okay. Thank you very much. Meeting adjourned. Go home. Put your lights off. Walk. Walk, don't drive.